In the new book, The Philadelphia Chromosome, journalist Jessica Wapner tells the story of the breakthrough cancer drug Gleevec, which has saved the lives of thousands of patients with chronic myeloid leukemia, CML, and other cancers since the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved it back in 2001. It was the first targeted cancer drug developed after researchers identified the genetic mutation that gave rise to CML, and it set in motion the race to uncover the genetic roots of a wide range of cancers. Jessica Wapner is a freelance science writer focused mainly on healthcare and medicine. Her writing on cancer research and treatment has also appeared in patient-focused and industry publications, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jessica Wapner to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It is a delight. What got you thinking and working on this particular subject of the Philadelphia chromosome?
Well, I had been working at a medical journal back in around the year 2000, and I had heard these words, the Philadelphia chromosome, which is just the best name for a genetic mutation. And it stuck in my head, what is this, the Philadelphia chromosome? And I knew it had something to do with chronic myeloid leukemia, this rare and deadly blood cancer, but I didn't know too much more about it. Later, when I became a full-time freelance writer, I started researching the story and came to realize after speaking with dozens of scientists and researchers and people in the industry, outside the industry, that this story was about so much more than just a scientific discovery. It had science, medicine, but also incredible stories of people. And challenges and overcoming challenges and one hurdle after the next and a whole emotional journey and so much to discover about the nature of science. And I kind of came to realize, well, this was a book. This wasn't going to be a magazine article for me. There was a whole book to write here.
When you look at the history behind those headlines of the sequence of discoveries that brought this treatment of cancer at the genetic level, what got them down that road initially? How much of that was focused in, I mean, we use the word targeted, but how targeted? And how, because it does seem in reading the book that there's some luck here too.
There was a lot of luck, a lot of serendipity. One of the first people to discover the Philadelphia chromosome was Peter Knoll and his colleague David Hungerford in Philadelphia, which is why it's named this. And Peter Knoll credits serendipity for, you know, so much of his success and his early success in his research. It took years to make the connection, though. They found it in 1959, but at that time, nobody knew, was this causing the leukemia? Was the leukemia causing the mutation? And there was no technology to answer those questions. Starting around 1970, 1971, there were new techniques that allowed people to see, not just look at chromosomes, but look inside chromosomes. And then it was another 10 or so years for the whole picture to come together in the mid-1980s of how this chromosome was driving the cancer. The chromosome encodes a protein, so mutant gene leads to mutant protein, and that protein triggers this unchecked production of white blood cells. And it was in the mid-1980s when that became clear that an oncologist at the time he was in Boston, Brian Druker, who's just about to win the Albany Prize, by the way. So Brian Druker and some other people were starting to think, wait a minute, can we make a drug that blocks this mechanism, that blocks the cancer at its root cause? But nobody had been thinking that. It wasn't on anybody's screen until there was some direct connection made between the gene and the cancer.
What was it about of making that connection that it is so difficult in the sense of why finding any type of treatment or cure for cancer is so rare?
Right. Well, I'll give you a two-part answer. As cancer evolves, it accrues additional genetic mutations. And so a cancer cell that starts out being just a little bit different from a normal cell becomes more and more different as the cancer progresses in a lot of cases. And so uncovering the genetic drivers of cancer, so not just what mutations are present, but which ones are driving the mutation. This term, the driver mutations, driver genes, is something we can expect to be hearing more about as a kind of medical buzzword. Figuring out which ones are the underpinning of the cancer is very difficult. One scientist explained it to me, it's like picture finding a needle in a haystack, but where more needles appear as you're digging through the hay, and you never know which one is the one you're supposed to be looking for anymore. And then, of course, the challenge to create a drug once you identify that needle is also very difficult. It's not easy. The reason why this story is so important is because it proved the principle that if you find that driving mutation, you can block the cancer. It is possible.
Tell us about the drug Gleevec, of what we know about it and why it is so revolutionary.
There's so many reasons why Gleevec is revolutionary. I call it the canary in the pharmaceutical industry coal mine. It was the first drug to treat cancer at its root cause. And not only that, it's taken as a pill once a day, and it has minimal side effects. In the beginning, patients experience bone pain because the bones are swollen from being filled up with too many white blood cells in the marrow. And as the body readjusts, the bones readjust, that hurts. There's some cramping as the body gets used to the chemical. There's puffy eyes that don't go away for a lot of people. But this is not the kinds of side effects we see with chemotherapy, where people are nauseous, vomiting, numb, losing hair. It is not like that at all. Now, imagine that cancer is what we know of cancer, this deadly disease, and someone is telling you, I have a pill that you can take once a day. It will have no side effects, and it will let you live a long and healthy life. I mean, that's science fiction. But in 2001, the FDA approved Gleevec. It was the fastest approval in their history, and the drug is still working. There are people who were on the original clinical trials that started in 1998 that are still alive. There are now second and third generation versions of Gleevec. There's about six of these drugs approved just for this rare leukemia that work for patients that the original didn't work for. It's a pioneering drug, and we're still in the experiment. Every day that those original patients are alive is another day in this ongoing experiment. But Gleevec, of course, has also had other reasons why it's at the leading edge, which is, you know, to do with the cost, to do with showing that it's possible to make money from treating a rare disease. There's that whole aspect of the drug as well.
The canary in the pharmaceutical coal mine. What does that say about the pharmaceutical industry, and in an industry that has such a black eye, that a drug like this can come out of it? And what does it say about us and our trust and science and its trust in doctors and science and ultimately this industry that is producing this drug that is making people better?
Yeah, it's such a good question, and it's so difficult to have any simple answer in a way. What I think this story shows is that economics make things very complicated, and that there will always be financial pressure when we have for-profit drug development. One of the great things about this story that I just love so much is that in the end, humanity trumped economy. Humanity won. Getting a drug to patients who were dying from a rare disease, even though the drug company did not know whether it was going to make a dime, that won out over the financial concerns of how will we make money from a disease that occurs in so few people with a drug that costs so much to make. However, there were years of delays and years of many people thinking this drug is never going to happen. And it was rescued by patients, it was rescued by doctors, and it was rescued by people inside the pharmaceutical company saying, this is unacceptable, we have got to get this drug to patients.
Not to belabor this point, but when you talked earlier about serendipity, you get a sense in the book that curiosity is so much a part of this story, where there is a group of scientists and doctors who say, well, what would happen if, ...
That's right. I mean, these are our tax dollars at work in a way, because so much of this work, the work that you're talking about, was federal grants funding basic scientists who were asking the right questions at the right time. They were following their curiosity. I like to think of it as we fund curiosity. The notion of just doing science for science's sake, knowing that no good research is ever wasted, no good experiment is ever wasted, right? We could never have predicted that Herb Abelson researching a mouse virus at the NIH in the 1960s would eventually lead to a stunning revelation about a gene that was driving chronic myeloid leukemia. But when you read the book, you see how that trace occurred. And it was only because Herb Abelson had a mentor who said, figure out what you want to research and go do it.
The other thing about the story is that we're going back in almost a 25-year history. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at what is being done now, are we in the middle of an exciting time, or have we stalled a bit?
It's difficult to say, but I think we're at the beginning of a new era. This is what, as Brian Druker explains it to me, and as he writes, as I quote him in the book, we are at the beginning of a new era. It's very difficult to see a successful cancer drug and then have to wait. And that the next one that comes out is the extended survival time is maybe 1 or 2 months, 6 months, that we haven't had another Gleevec. But he and so many other people dream of a Gleevec for every cancer and trying to find out how to do that. This book is the origin story for our current moment in cancer research, how we got to this time of thinking about personalized medicine, treating cancer or any disease at the genetic level or at its root cause, rather. And the notion, I think, that we're at the beginning of an era, that we were there then, I think that's very exciting.
The name of the book is The Philadelphia Chromosome, A Mutant Gene in the Quest to Cure Cancer at the Genetic Level. It is published by The Experiment. Jessica Wapner, a great pleasure. I thank you very much for being a part of our program and sharing your expertise.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Philadelphia Chromosome, A Mutant Gene in the Quest to Cure Cancer at the Genetic Level, by Jessica Wapner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.